Hey guys, before we get started, this podcast has some strong language. You've been warned.
This week's episode of The Rabble was recorded at 1:04 p.m. Central on Wednesday, July 10th, 2019, in the great state of Texas, where the official state fruit is the Texas red grapefruit.
I flip my hair back and forth. Hey, Becky, you're in a cheery mood, which you're kind of always in, but you're singing.
Yes, I have this song stuck in my head from the promo video we did to get people excited about the Blue Action Democrats flipping awesome fundraiser this Sunday.
What? Oh, yeah. And we're wearing crazy wigs and rocking out in the video, and we'll link it in the show notes because I think we were adorable.
I do really love that video. So this week's episode is brought to you by the Blue Action Dems, otherwise known as the Get Shit Done Club. They're having a big-ass fundraiser this Sunday, July 14th at the Highball in Austin. You know what they're raising money to do?
Flip the Texas house.
That's right. In 2018, the Blue Action Dems helped flip a Texas house seat. Shout out to Vicki Goodwin. Mm-hmm. Now they want to take their super successful model to 17 other Texas house districts where the Republican won by less than 10% last time.
It's going to be a flipping great time for a flipping great cause. Rouser is also hosting Flip Cup.
Woo!
And we're also doing a fun trivia game with prizes.
Ooh. That's right. And Shiro's Julie Oliver and Wendy Davis will be speaking. It's going to be a party. So go to blueactiondems.com to get your ticket or just donate a few bucks to the flipping great cause of flipping the Texas house.
Welcome to The Rabble, a podcast by Rouser. We are three progressive Texans who felt like flipping some tables after the 2016 election, but we decided a more productive use of our energy would be to flip congressional seats instead. So for the last couple of years, we've been learning to become activists, eventually quitting our corporate jobs to form our new venture, Rouser. Our goal is to inspire other progressive Texans to get some shit done and to share the stories of the candidates, electeds, and organizers who inspire us to do shit. Consider us your humble, uncivil servants.
Every week, we have three distinct segments. First up is always Fuck, Marry, Kill. For folks that haven't tuned in before, Political Fuck, Marry, Kill is where we break down news from the week that we want to fuck, marry, or kill. Not people, but political stuff.
For example, I want to fuck the fact that this week UT Austin announced that they will be giving free tuition to students from families who make less than $65,000 a year.
And then for Becky's Did Y'all Know segment, we'll hear from Gina Ortiz Jones,
Sploon,
feminist hero and candidate for U.S. Congress in Texas's 23rd district.
And finally, Ashley will close us out with some shit to do, because when everything stinks, it means we've probably got a lot of shit to do.
We're your hosts. I'm Ashley Chang.
I'm Jen Ramos.
I'm Becky Bullard. Together, for this week, we're Rouser, and this is The Rabble.
Today's episode of The Rabble is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, the Texas chapter of the Asian Pacific Islander American Public Affairs Association, otherwise known as APAPA. You might not be able to tell because this is a podcast, but I'm Asian.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah. And our Asian population in Texas is the fastest growing in terms of percent change year over year. And you know what else?
What?
Latinx Texans are on track to become the largest population group in Texas by 2022.
What?
Yeah. And do you know how that makes racist people feel?
I love
angry.
Real freaked out. Yeah, that's why the Trump administration is obsessing over this citizenship question he's trying to add to the census to reduce the number of people who get counted and therefore the amount of power and money we all have.
Boo.
So the census decides the number of reps that Texas has in the U.S. Congress, things like redistricting, electoral votes in presidential elections, federal dollars we receive for things like transportation and education and social services. And even a 1% undercount in 2020 could cost Texas $300 million in federal funding.
What?
Whoa.
Right? Plus, businesses use census data to determine whether to invest in Texas. So if Republicans care about money, they should care about the census. Join APAPA at their event Save the Census, a training for Central Texans on Saturday, July 13th from 10 a.m. to 4:30. Texas is counting on us to make sure we all get counted. So get trained and you'll leave with an action plan to figure out how we can ensure that all of our communities get counted in the 2020 census. We'll link it in the show notes.
And we're back. All right, it is time for political fuck, marry, kill, where we are not fucking, marrying, or killing politicians, but stuff that we love or hate in Texas politics this week. And this week, we are missing our dear Kristen Gunn, but we are so happy to welcome one of our favorite Texas Democrats, Jen Ramos.
Welcome, Jen.
Yay. Jen is the first Latina president of the Austin Young Democrats. She's a communications director for the Texas Young Democrats. She's a Texas National Committee woman for the Young Democrats of America. And she is in crunch time for her campaign to become the vice president for the Young Democrats of America.
No pressure. Not at all. Jen,
no pressure to the rest of us, because Jen apparently is just the best Democrat in Texas doing all the things.
I think so. Certainly the best Young Democrat in Texas. And I want you to explain a little bit more, Jen, about what the Young Democrats organization is and why it's important that we have representation from Texas in it.
Well, okay. So for starters, the Young Democrats of America are the official youth branch of the Democratic Party. So we represent young Democrats between the ages of 14 to 36. And we currently have several chapters all across the country and several territories, including Puerto Rico, hashtag Puerto Rico statehood, and the Virgin Islands. And part of that comes with representation from all across the country. And so in my capacity of working with the Young Democrats, I'm involved locally, statewide, and national. Texas is one of the largest chapters in the country.
Triple threat.
Team no sleep. But yeah, no, part of it is just that if you see something that you think needs to get changed, you don't just sit by and let it happen. Like the rabble. You get shit done. You make it happen, and you go out and you go in there and you elect the people that you think need to do the job. Or you go and support the people you think need to do the job.
Or you go be the person who needs to do
the
job.
Which is exactly why I'm running. I'm excited to represent not only Texas, but all the voices that have been silenced across the country. Whether you're a working class waitress trying to make ends meet, whether you're a single mom trying to balance a budget and take care of your kids, whether you're a foster kid who just wants to get out of the system and find a family, these are all people who have been disenfranchised, and they deserve the representation of being involved in politics. And so for every working class folk that's out there, but also every other person who's been told you don't have a place in politics, which is very common, being a young Democrat, this is why I'm running. And this is the importance of having Texas have a seat at the table.
And here's one of the reasons why I love you for running, Jen, because you talk about people who, you know, kind of aren't necessarily invited to the party when it comes to the political process. And I feel like you're the perfect example of that. You don't come from a very politically involved family, right? You were like, you came out of the gate being like, wait a second.
Yeah. So funny story, my family is not politically involved, or they weren't at first. So my mom was a working single mom, worked as a nurse her entire life, and I was that nagging kid that kept asking questions. Why? Why is this the way it is? Why do we not get the support that we need? Why can't I go play outside? And my mom was just like, I don't question it. Just let it be. It is what it is. And then as I got older, I realized that we were at this disadvantage of being a household in a low-income community, you know, raised by a single parent. And nothing was being done to reflect those issues. And that's why I got into politics. And I think that's what's stopping a lot of people from being involved in politics in the first place. It's the, I have so much going on in my life right now. I don't have the time to go block walk. I don't have the time to go vote, because literally it's a decision of taking time off from work or providing food for my family. And that's not the way it should be. All politics is local and all politics is personal. And that's what got me involved. And I kid you not, y'all, this is my mom's first election with a presidential primary where she's actually paying attention to candidates. You don't want to be on those phone calls.
That's awesome. I'm so inspired by people like you who jump in and figure it out for themselves. And now you're doing all the things. You're like number one Democrat in Texas.
How can we support you in your campaign?
Well,
I want you to win.
So my election will be taking place at the Young Democrats of America National Convention in Indianapolis, Indiana, July 17th through the 20th. So if you are interested in helping out, go check out our website. I also have a great running mate. His name is Tristan Bro. He works in affordable housing based out of D.C., is the outgoing chair for the Young Democrats of America Black Caucus. So we have been a power team working together on this campaign. You can check us out at ydapromise.com.
And we will definitely link to that in the show notes and all of our socials.
Love a good power team. Thank you so much for running.
Thank you. Thank you.
And don't forget to kick them a few bucks because they're in crunch time for this campaign and they really need our help to get over the finish line.
Please and thank you.
Yes. Well, let's segue over to our fuck. Becky, you've got our fuck.
I do. I've got a mellow fuck. So this week, I would like to fuck the fact that there are a whole bunch of counties in Texas that are not prosecuting people for possessing pot right now. Now, you might be wondering, wait a second, but we did not legalize pot in Texas. Why are people not being prosecuted? And I will tell you. So there's a bunch of counties that aren't prosecuting, including Travis, Tarrant, Harris, Bear, Fort Bend, Lubbock, Rockwall, Kaufman, and Nueces, just to name a few.
Wow. So everybody move over to these counties.
That's right. So the reason why this is the case right now is because of an unintended consequence of a bill that passed this legislative session, House Bill 1325. And what that bill did was legalize hemp. Now, hemp is related to cannabis, but hemp is the plant that does not have any THC in it. And THC, or has very low levels of THC. And THC is the psychoactive part of cannabis that's what gets you high.
That's like the fun part. Okay.
Right.
Otherwise, THC without that, it's just like a bunch of scratchy sweaters, like you said, and necklaces.
That's right.
And like strange lotion.
Yeah. So, House Bill 1325 was passed so that farmers could start to cultivate hemp, which is a very useful product for things like scratchy sweaters. But it does contain a very small amount of THC. So the legal limit for hemp that the Texas legislature set was 0.3% THC. Now, the problem here is none of the police departments in the state have the equipment that is accredited to test for THC.
You mean they can't test the devil's lettuce?
Only if they smoke it, I guess.
So what is happening with all the other counties then? You mentioned all those other counties, but is everyone else just like, have they figured this out?
No, nobody's figured it out. In fact, there's only one lab in all of Texas that is certified to test for THC, and there's no way that that one lab could process all of these samples that they would be getting from these cases. So a bunch of cases have been dismissed. Tarrant County has dismissed more than 230 possession cases since June 10th when this law went into effect. And one expert estimated that in order for a lab to get up and running, it would cost between $300,000 and $500,000 per lab, and the state would need about 20 of those labs to process all of the pot that they would be testing. So that's like $10 million. And so nobody really has a good way of dealing with this. However, one county district attorney, Hayes County District Attorney Wes Mao, has come out and said, listen, we are still going to continue prosecuting possession of cannabis, even though they have no way of testing it. And all these other district attorneys are like, well, you know, there's no sense in us spinning our wheels and spending resources for and not being able to really have a good outcome in a case. So this district attorney is like, nope, Hayes County, we're still going to go after you, which is a big deal because arrest for possession of pot is the number one reason for arrest in Hayes County. And this is just a reminder as well that we elect our district attorneys. So if you live in Hayes County and you feel like this is an unnecessary use of resources and we should be spending our time and resources doing other things than trying to prosecute people who their case will be eventually thrown out because there's no way to prove, then you should think about supporting somebody else for DA next time.
When is this the Hayes County DA up for re-election?
Not till 2022, so you've got some time to go to law school.
Yes, brush up on your legal know-how and just get in there. You can run against him.
Yeah. Or you can support a woman who's going to law school right now to run.
Heck yeah! So that's my fuck for this week. Unintentional decriminalization of pot.
And I just find this really funny because all of the legislative session, we had so many legislators come forward with bills to reform marijuana and the decriminalization of marijuana. And you want to know who the person was responsible for killing a lot of those bills?
I got a guess.
Who do you got?
I'm going to go with...
Lieutenant Dan.
Bingo, Lieutenant Dan. Lieutenant Dan, the chicken man who refuses to debate. I will still hold him accountable to it. But you know what, Dan Patrick? You can stick it in your pipe and smoke it.
Well, that was a highly informative book. Thanks, Becky. That brings us to our marry this week. Jen, what do you got? What are we marrying?
So I'm really excited about this. So in case you don't know, I don't always agree with the governor on anything. if you have me on Twitter, you will know that I get into a lot of squabbles with Governor Greg Abbott. But in the 86th Texas legislature, Greg Abbott named mental health as one of the emergency agenda items. I don't always agree with him, believe me, but I do appreciate that we're discussing mental health in Texas. My Mary in particular is a feature done by Sarah Marloff from the Austin Chronicle, discussing the Austin women dispelling stigma and moving mental health issues forward.
Awesome. We'll link that in the show notes. I also just have to say, of course, Governor Abbott does something good, and there's obviously all these women behind the scenes doing all the hard
work. Good point.
For sure. And this article basically breaks down a lot of the local women who are discussing not only the stigma of mental health, but how they're breaking that stigma. Mm. Examples of this are Karen Ramis, who's the executive director of the Central Texas Division of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI. She shared her story on how she personally experienced the stigma of speaking out about mental illness. Her mother had died a little over a year prior and got a lot of support from family and friends.
Casseroles and whatnot.
Yeah, and a little after that, her daughter attempted to commit suicide and nothing. But she kind of realized that it was a double-edged sword where, you know, I didn't necessarily make a Facebook post or reach out to anybody talking about what happened, but also no one reached out to me and let me know that I was supported and validated. And she's used this to move forward and help other people and destigmatizing mental health.
I do. I really appreciate this. And I have a friend of mine. Her name's Kendall Antonelli. And if you guys live in Austin, you might have heard of her because she owns with her husband Antonelli's Cheese Shop, which is an amazing shop. They're in Hyde Park in Austin. She had posted about, she actually has volunteered with NAMI before. I think she might be on the board.
Yeah.
But she had posted her own personal story on Facebook about her own struggles with mental health and depression. And that for me was a really eye-opening moment because I had struggled with depression pretty severely throughout most of my childhood, really. And I had never really talked about it. And she, I mean, just like posting on Facebook, and she did some media around it. And I read some interviews and was so touched that this person who is like so delightful to be around, and she's just full. I mean, she sells cheese for a living and her children are adorable. So she just seems so joyful and effervescent. And I had no idea that she'd gone through all of these things. But it was the fact that she shared her story that made me realize, like, you know what, I should probably be, there's power in that, right? That I, you know, should be more open with my own story. And one of the reasons why I'm really passionate about things like common sense gun legislation and gun storage is because when I was like 13 years old, I was in middle school, I had attempted to commit suicide, and it was with a gun that wasn't stored.
Oh, Ash, I never knew this.
And it's something that I have, honestly, like I don't share that with people. People who are close to me, have known me for a long time, know that it was something that I struggled with for a really long time. But I think it's just a great reminder that you just never know what people are going through. And so I so appreciate organizations like NAMI going out there and really trying to destigmatize and normalize these issues so that we can talk about them and then we can get solutions for people out there, right? And compassionate mental health care should definitely be a priority.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I also suffer from mental health issues myself. I have depression and anxiety and a slew of issues that you don't talk about, and you don't know how to talk about it or who to talk about it with. And especially, I know in minority cultures, particularly the Latinx culture, you get this sense of, I can't talk about it. You have to suck it up. You have to get over it. And it's almost just, it's culturally ingrained that you just don't talk about it. When is there a right time to talk about it?
Yeah.
And so we do our run-throughs. And Ash, earlier you were like, I don't know if I want to share this. I don't want you to feel weird. And I just think that's so reflective of how we treat mental health issues, is we're worried how our mental health issues are going to make other people feel. Yeah. And that's just like, I don't know. I think there's nothing more powerful than being able to be there for each other and
and feel comfortable being open and vulnerable, because what are we here for if not to be there for each other and to understand and to help each other? So thank you for being vulnerable enough to share that. And I'm so, so grateful that you are here today.
Things would not be the same without you. And for anybody who's listening, who's been there, the world is not the same without you. Don't forget that the world is not the same without you.
So true. So true. Thank you for saying that.
And just wrapping up on that, you know, giving some huge shout outs to Sheriff Sally Hernandez, who's worked with NAMI and Integral Care to train officers and help divert those in need of mental health services from jail. For those of you who don't know, a good chunk of the mental health services we provide in the state of Texas come from our jails because we've criminalized those suffering from mental health issues.
And we just don't provide resources for people who need it. It's crazy.
And they're nonviolent offenders, and these are people who are consistently going through the jail systems trying just to find a sense of peace. And if we can't provide them with a sense of peace, what are we doing as a society?
Mm. Yeah, like what good is it? I say this all the time about all these social issues that we talk about. What good is it if we have the best economy in the country if most of us are suffering in some way or another?
Yeah. And we've talked a lot about the issues of our homeless population, specifically in Austin recently, right? We got a lot of news with our city council recently changing some of our ordinances. And like that, I mean, at the end of the day, oftentimes our homeless population is also a mental health crisis mm-hmm. that we're not addressing.
So shout out to Sheriff Sally Hernandez, much appreciated. But also another one of my favorite sheroes is State Representative Celia Israel.
Oh, she's amazing.
You know, after the suicides of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, she came out with her own story of suicidal ideations with the Pflugerville flag as a young person coming to terms with her sexuality. And in spite of everything she went through, she has carried a bill to ban conversion therapy in the state of Texas for 3 sessions and just got a hearing in the 86th legislature.
Wow.
So this is why I want to marry this so much.
Yes, ladies doing the things, bringing mental health issues forward, and everyone who shares their personal story. Gosh, my like eternal gratitude to you.
All right. Well, that brings us to our kill for the week.
Ooh.
And I got a long, slow kill, guys. So get ready. I want to kill the fact that Texas is in court right now to repeal Obamacare. And I extra want to kill the fact that we have no plan for the 1 million Texans who would lose subsidized health insurance if that happens. And also the protections for patients with pre-existing conditions, which is a big one.
Hi, like every woman in Texas?
Exactly. When we already have the highest uninsured rate in the country. And also, this would affect the 20 million Americans who get their health coverage through Obamacare right now. And we have no idea what would happen to all of them.
Does that not sound like the most Republican thing, though? We're going to get rid of this. We don't know what's going to happen, but we're going to get rid of it anyway.
It's so horrifying.
Good luck to you.
Bye.
So, I've also been thinking about taking up hunting because I eat meat, and I feel like if you're going to kill something, you should understand what that means, which means for this kill, I had to do a lot of extra research on what's happening with Obamacare and the courts because I realized I just had absolutely no idea what was going on. I kept reading these headlines, and I like hadn't fully formed in my brain what that meant. So there's a lot to the law, first off, that I think many of us might not realize or that we take for granted that it's a part of Obamacare. Things like young adults staying on their parents' health insurance plans until the age of 26, mm-hmm. which means both of my sisters wouldn't have health insurance.
And newsflash, millennials, we're not making millions right now.
Yeah, true.
There's a host of low-cost benefits available to all people with health insurance, including those covered through their employers, through the employer mandate. Calorie counts on menus, if you like having that as an option, that would be gone. Things like bundling payments and permanent reauthorization of something that's called the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, well baby care, limits on premium increases, preventative care benefits, pathways for approval of generic copies of expensive drugs, and a bunch of other complicated behind-the-scenes stuff that I think sounds kind of boring, but are clearly really important, like ways that doctors and hospitals are getting paid. Like, this is a really large, sprawling law.
Oh, it's enormous. And I have to say, personally, I was so happy when Obamacare was put in place because at the time I was 8 months pregnant and at a job that I really did not like. And I was able to leave that job and go into business for myself and not be worried that I wouldn't get the same maternity care that I had been getting through my employer plan because I was able to get a plan through Obamacare, which I don't think would have been possible before.
That happened to me too. I quit my corporate PR job in Boston so I could move to Texas and not be worried about how I was going to get coverage.
Oh my God, Texas is so lucky to have you. Thank you, Obama.
Thanks, Obama, and in the best way.
Yeah. So this conservative fight to get rid of Obamacare, also known as the Affordable Care Act, it's been going on for like the last decade. So in order to understand this, we have to rewind back to 2012 when the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 decision that was written by Chief Justice John Roberts, who's typically thought of as a conservative justice, that Obamacare was constitutional and that it could stay intact because the individual mandates weren't actually a legal command to buy insurance because they were really just a tax penalty, right? If you didn't get insurance, you would get taxed extra for it. And Congress does have the right to taxation power. So it all hinged on this whole taxation power, which I had to hang out last night with Rouser's lawyer to mansplain some of this to me.
But he mansplains in the best way.
In the best way. And there's nothing like free legal counsel.
But... And it's also not mansplaining if it's solicited.
That's
just
true.
A pro
true.
Tip.
Consensual. It's true. It's true.
Okay, but then remember back in 2017 when the Republican-controlled Congress, they couldn't get anything done, but they were really excited to pass this despicable, absurd tax bill for corporations and the wealthy.
That's right, and dug us into a huge deficit in the process.
Thanks a lot, Republicans.
And remember also, as a part of that, they killed the insurance mandate.
Right.
Yeah, that was a really shitty thing to do. So almost exactly a year later, in December of 2018, in a case in the U.S. District Court, the case was called Texas versus the United States.
It's all Texas' fault.
Which, seriously, where a federal judge named Reed O'Connor, who was appointed by George Bush, the shrub, declared that Obamacare was now unconstitutional because Congress took away the part about taxation power. Although, oddly, I read that the tax penalty language is still technically there because they can't take it out. It's just the penalty is $0, which seems like there's so many, like, strange antiquated things that happen in our government that seem absurd.
Oh, don't even get me started because liquor laws are a great way to go about antiquated legislation.
Oh, seriously.
Seriously.
Okay, and this week, Obamacare is back in court. That decision was appealed in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Louisiana, which an appeal is kind of like when one of your parents make a decision that you don't like, so you go to the other one. Except in this case, our parents are lower and higher courts, and more specifically in this instance, our other parent is this panel of three judges in Louisiana, who one was appointed by Jimmy Carter, one was appointed by George W. Bush, and the other one is appointed by Donald Trump.
Hmm.
Like when you hear people say that Trump's biggest legacy is going to be the many very young judges that he's appointed to these federal courts, like this is what they're talking about. This is going to affect us for generations to come.
This is why millennials need to continue voting. Just putting that out there.
True story.
So they'll decide the ruling in the next few weeks. But just as a spoiler alert, the fight is probably going to the Supreme Court again. Because whoever loses, they'll just appeal again. They'll just keep finding the other parent to get another decision. And honestly, if shit really hits the fan and we actually do lose Obamacare altogether, I read that Governor Abbott could have to call a special session because we don't have a session until 2021. This could happen before then. And since Republicans gave zero fucks about healthcare during our last legislative session that just ended a few months ago, we have no plan for what to do with all these people who are uninsured in Texas.
Oh, my gosh.
Shout out, though, to John Busey and Gina Hinojosa, who have done their best to put affordable health care on the map with the Healthy Texans Act and for the expansion of Medicaid through the legislature. MVPs, y'all. Really. You'll put it on the record.
Yes.
Seriously. And if you care about these issues, you should go work on their campaigns to make sure they get to stay in office and go work on other campaigns for the Texas House to make sure we keep having folks in there who are going to advocate for healthcare.
Honestly, it's so important to me that this next session becomes the healthcare session in the way that this past one was, you know, school finance reform. I'm all about the upcoming session in 2021 fixing some of these absurd problems that we have with having the highest uninsured rate, you know, our maternal mortality rate being so high. We need people in office who are going to actually do something about it. And we need more Democrats in office to help out the folks like John Busey who are doing really good work on the healthcare front in Texas.
Yes. So even after all this, if you're still confused and like, this kind of makes no sense, That's because it really doesn't. I had read that a brief filed with the appeals court by a bunch of nonpartisan legal scholars from both sides of the fight over the ACA, that they agreed that the Texas lawsuit's underlying claims make no sense. Huh. And my favorite quote comes from Professor Nicholas Bagley at the University of Michigan Law School, who worked at the Department of Justice during President Barack Obama's tenure. He said, and I quote, "It's a really stupid lawsuit."
Agree.
Naturally, this would take place in Texas.
Of course.
Yes, of course. So that's our political fuck, marry, kill for the week, guys. Let us know. What did you think? Reach out to us on social at RouserTX. Let us know what your fuck, marry, and kills were for the week.
We love getting people's fuck, marry, kill. So give them to us at RouserTX.
Give it to us.
Give it to us.
Okay. So, Becky, what do you know this week?
Well, as you mentioned earlier in the show, today we're going to be interviewing Gina Ortiz Jones, who is a real badass running for U.S. Congress in Texas's 23rd Congressional District. So since we're going to be talking about the 23rd Congressional District, I wanted to give a little bit of background on it for folks who maybe don't know so much about it. This is a huge district that contains about two-thirds of Texas's border with Mexico, and it is next door to the district that Beto O'Rourke used to represent, that is now represented by Veronica Escobar. So the Texas 23rd Congressional District has an interesting history that dates back to the 2002 elections when Republicans won control of the Texas state legislature for the first time in 130 years, which is kind of shocking to me. Like, I, for some reason, thought that Republicans had controlled the state ledge for a long time, but it's only been since 2002. And before that, it wasn't for a long time. So once they had that control in the 2003 session, they decided, the Republicans in the state legislature decided to draw new lines for our U.S. congressional districts. And so they gerrymandered the hell out of them and strategically drew them in such a way that Republicans picked up six safe seats in Congress overnight for Texas.
Wow. Six seats.
Yeah. It was crazy. And just to note, before this, Democrats were doing the gerrymandering, and I personally don't think any political party should be in charge of drawing districts. I think it should be a totally nonpartisan committee that makes them safe and competitive so that we have, you know, some real exchange of ideas and not extremists getting elected to these seats. So when this gerrymandering happened, a couple different groups brought a lawsuit against the state arguing that race had been used to draw the new district lines and they should be thrown out because they were racist and therefore unconstitutional. So the 23rd District of Texas was at the center of this controversy because when they drew that district, they carved out so many Latinx voters that it became Hispanic dominant only by a razor thin majority, despite the fact that this is like a very largely Latinx population.
It's next to the border, y'all. Just putting that out there.
Yeah. Like, a huge part of it is on the border. It's crazy. So this case went back and forth between the Supreme Court, a bunch of courts over the span of about 6 years, and eventually they decided that District 23 would be allowed to be drawn in such a way that high voter turnout Latinx populations were taken out and replaced with historically low voter turnout Latinx populations in order to maintain a technical Hispanic majority in this district. I think, Jen, you had a good analogy for it's like calling Taco Bell Mexican food.
Yes. No, that's for sure. It's like, yeah, for sure. You can totally see there are Latinx voters, but it's low voter turnout replacing them with consistent Latinx voters, and especially if you look at the areas that are around, for example, Joaquin Castro's district that touches Texas 23 in Bexar County, looking at Lloyd Doggett's district that slightly avoids Texas 23, you're cutting out and disenfranchising voters.
Totally.
When you're from this district, right? Are you still here?
I spent some time living in Eagle Pass, and so I lived in Texas 23 when Pete Gallego was the congressman right before Will Hurd took over. But you got to understand that even just living in Eagle Pass, even though that's a significant concentration of voters, that's just a speck in comparison to how big Texas 23 is.
It's absurdly huge. I can't imagine having a campaign there. We'll link in the show notes just an image of what this district looks like, because I feel like you can't really get it until you actually see it drawn out on the map of Texas.
Like, I think it takes up a good chunk of Texas. It's one of that part of that panhandle that just stretches over, and it just doesn't even look like a district. It looks like a region. itself.
Totally. Yeah, it could be a state.
It could be its own state. So true.
So it's a hard district to win, and it swung back and forth several times. And that's why I'm so impressed with Gina Ortiz Jones, who is back at it again for the second time, trying to unseat Will Hurd, the Republican incumbent in that district. And so excited to talk to her. Fun fact, do you know who represented the state of Texas in front of the Supreme Court when Texas was arguing that we should be able to keep these racist districts?
Is this one of those times where your fun facts aren't that fun?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Nefarious, noted Zodiac killer.
Oh, God.
Ew.
Ted Cruz. Yeah, he was the Solicitor General for Texas at the time and got a 5-4 ruling from the Supreme Court in favor of being able to keep these gerrymandered districts.
Thanks a lot, Raphael.
Speaking of Taco Bell passing off as real Mexican food, it's the real deal.
Ooh. Burn.
So that's my little did y'all know on Texas 23 before we get to talk to the Shiro who's going to take it over. Okay, so today I am so pleased to welcome Gina Ortiz Jones, a native of San Antonio, a former U.S. Air Force intelligence officer, a first-generation American whose single mother immigrated from the Philippines to seek the unique opportunities America offers. And Gina is running for the second time to unseat Republican Will Hurd in Texas's 23rd U.S. Congressional District. And if she's elected, she would be the first openly gay member of Congress from Texas. She is a real Shiro of ours, and it is such a thrill to get to talk to you, Gina.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh. I was so thrilled when I found out that you were running again because the margin in your first race, first of all, I forgot that it was your first time running for office. That's amazing. And you came so close. What was the final vote difference?
Yeah, 926 votes. So 0.4%.
Oh, my gosh. And I love the fact that you really fought hard to make sure every vote was counted right there at the end. You didn't concede until all the provisional ballots were in, and I thought you were such a badass for doing that.
Well, absolutely. You know, this is that last the night of the election, you know, there were still votes coming in from overseas, you know, including our military members that are overseas. And so as an Air Force veteran myself, I was absolutely going to make sure that their vote was counted because there's so much on the line and there continues to be so much on the line, right? From healthcare, a woman's right to make decisions about her own body, you know, an immigration policy that reflects our values. Just all of it was on the line. So I was absolutely going to make sure that everybody's voice was heard.
I love that. And like you said, it is still all on the line. And that's why I'm so happy that you're back in the fight again. And I'm curious if there are some lessons from your first run for office that are informing your campaign this time around.
Yeah, I think this is a, you know, for context, I'm not sure how familiar folks are with the district. I think I'm just going to lay out a couple of things, though, so people can like wrap their heads around this district. You know, it's a district that's gone back and forth just about every election cycle. It's a district that is larger than 30 states. Right? 40% of the border with Mexico is in this district. So we spend a lot of time on the road. I think, you know, one of the things that sticks out in my mind is that this is a district that I think is an interesting microcosm for the entire country. Right? You've got two large population centers on either side, San Antonio and El Paso. El Paso, by the way, is in a different time zone, so that gives you a sense of how large this district is. We've got 40% of the border with Mexico is in this district. So, you know, we don't talk just about trade and immigration. We talk about those things at the same time because that's how we live them. And we've also got the rural and urban divide. 70% of the voting age population in this district live in the San Antonio area. But this is also a district that is 70% rural. So when we talk about, you know, the need to close the gap between our urban and our rural areas, that's something that's top of mind in a district like this one. So when I think about, you know, lessons learned from 2018, it's being very disciplined and focusing on what voters want to talk about. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's one showing up and in every community, you know, not phoning it in, making sure that people see you, people hear from you. They've got to get a sense of who you are, the life that you've lived, and most importantly, you know, trust in the fact that you're going to fight for them and do what's best for this district. So, you know, those are my main takeaways, and that's exactly how we're running this campaign currently.
I love that. And you're so right. I mean, it really takes listening to a lot of different types of people to make sure that you can represent all of them. And I think that's awesome that you're prioritizing that. Earlier in our show, we talked a little bit about the history of how the 23rd Congressional District was drawn and how it was gerrymandered to include a Latinx population that historically hasn't really turned out to vote as much. And I'm curious, knowing that this district was drawn this way, do you have a plan to reach those folks who aren't used to turning out to vote?
Well, absolutely. I think it, you know, it goes back to the point that I was just talking about, which is, you know, people want something to vote for. They want somebody to vote for, somebody that has their best interests at heart and is really going to try to make the change that is necessary in their lives and in the lives of their family. So, you know, I am thankful that, you know, that my story is possible, but I know that there are many people just like me in this district that need a little bit of help and can also go on to do, you know, great things to include serving their country. And that's why, you know, I talk about healthcare not only because we're the most uninsured state in the country, but also because, you know, I know the importance of good healthcare. It was good, affordable healthcare that saved my mother's life when she was diagnosed with cancer. You know, I was in the Air Force at the time, deployed to Iraq when that happened. And I found out actually when I got back that she'd already had the surgery and was already undergoing chemotherapy. So to me, you know, it's not, healthcare is not just numbers that we need to improve. It's certainly, you know, how this affects everybody's everyday, right? It affects that kid's ability to go to school, that parent's ability to go to work, and really the economic security of our families, communities, and this district in our state. So I think it's, you know, it'll be talking about, you know, these issues from a firsthand perspective and in an authentic way. You know, and I am not at all. I think it's important to also not shy away from topics, right? I think especially when there's a connection there with the community and it demonstrates your understanding of the importance of that. And so, for example, I talk about, you know, my service in the military. This is obviously Military USA. I did training at Lackland Air Force Base. But I am very clear about, you know, what it meant to serve under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You know, within 20 years, we've gone from the implementation of that policy, which allowed people to serve if they were gay, but you just could not say that you were gay, and to that being repealed, to then now what we have under this administration, which is a trans ban, effectively, oh, by the way, implemented by somebody who was too scared to serve themselves.
Right.
So I think I'm very clear about, you know, the pipeline of talent into public service and certainly into national security. Everybody willing and able to serve should be able to do that. And so I think, you know, that's an important piece that I highlight. But I also make the connection between my own experiences, for example, at Boston University, where I attended college and had a four-year ROTC scholarship, and really the fear that I lived in every single day about my scholarship being taken away from me if folks found out that I was gay. You know, my opportunity to get an education, my opportunity to serve our country, my opportunity to die for our country if need be, all of that taken away if they found out I was gay. So I have to think then about, you know, that dreamer at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Oh, by the way, one of the campuses with the largest dreamer populations in the country, or that kid at University of Texas at El Paso, or Sol Ross State, or even, you know, Palo Alto Community College, Northwest Vista, which is right up the road from me. You know, these young people that are doing everything that they need to be doing, American in every sense of the word, and similarly living in fear that their status could change, their opportunities could change overnight, the trajectory of their lives could change overnight just because we don't have leaders who are willing to stand up and do the right thing on their behalf. So, you know, we can't shy away from these topics. We've got to show folks that we know what it means, and we're ready to fight for them.
I think it's so, like you're saying, so important to have leaders who can empathize with folks who that they're fighting for. And, you know, even though you may not be a dreamer yourself, you've had a similar experience that helps you to understand the fear that those dreamers are living with. And I think will help you be able to fight for them in ways that some of our other representatives aren't.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I also want to go back. You were talking about, you know, being able to represent folks and understand kind of the situation that they're coming from. So for folks who don't know, your mom came here as an immigrant from the Philippines, and she raised you to appreciate the unique opportunities that America provides. She raised you as a single mom. And you've talked about before how opportunity is not evenly distributed in this country. And as a kid, you lived in subsidized housing for a while and were on the reduced cost lunch program, which I think 59% of kids in Texas public schools qualify for free or reduced cost lunch. And I'm curious, did you feel those disparities as a kid growing up?
Absolutely. I think it was other folks had their father picking them up from daycare, and I don't remember it, but my mom reminded me a while ago. She's like, yeah, you know, when you were younger, you would ask, you know, why are you the only one that picks us up from daycare, right? So it was clear, you know, even when you're a kid, you're actually pretty perceptive. But I think, you know, each of those experiences has just reminded me that, you know, talent is universal, opportunity is not, right? And so when I think about, you know, the community that I grew up, the opportunities that I was afforded, it's because I was born in this very special country. I mean, my mom and grandmother reminded my sister and I every single day just how lucky we were to be born in this country. We weren't smart to be born here, right? We had nothing to do with it. We were lucky to be born here, and we have to give back to a country that gave us so much. I mean, I've got first cousins just as talented, just as smart, just as hungry, just as hardworking. But just by the sheer fact that they weren't born in this country, have a very different life trajectory than my sister and I have and had. So I, you know, it was why I wanted to give back and gave back, via public service and national security. My sister's still in the Navy, but it's very much a core part of who we are and why it's so important that when I saw, you know, this administration and then obviously this representative through his complicitness, working to take away those opportunities from people, it very much, you know, I felt called to step up and make sure that those opportunities that very simply allowed me to grow up healthy, get an education, and serve our country are there for those behind us.
Well, I think that
view, though, I just wanted to be clear and sorry to interrupt, but, you know, it's shaped by my personal experiences, but it's also shaped by my professional experiences, right? I've served in countries where women and minorities are targeted, right? I've served in countries where government's disregard for conflict of interest has hollowed out those countries. And I've seen what happens when good people don't stand up or when they need to, right, to protect those opportunities. So it's certainly my personal experiences, but also having, you know, served in other countries where, you know, like, we know how this story ends up if we don't step up and do what we know needs to be done.
I think that's really important, and a lot of people don't take that global perspective a lot of times. I think it's important to keep that in mind. So thank you for mentioning that. So as we said earlier, this will be your second campaign to try and unseat Will Hurd, the Republican congressman who currently represents the 23rd District. And I feel like a lot of times Hurd gets painted as a moderate or somebody who works in a bipartisan way or a Republican that Democrats can like because he'll make statements kind of calling into question some of the tactics that Trump is using, like declaring an emergency at the border. Do you feel like that's accurate and fair?
All you have to do is look at Will Hurd's voting record, right? I don't care what you say on CNN. If you vote in a way that is, you know, contrary to that and contrary to the interests of this district, right? And that's what he's done time and time again. The bar is so low, right? The bar is so low on the other side. I would not use the word moderate to describe somebody that has voted consistently to defund Planned Parenthood, somebody who voted to deny Dreamers the ability to serve in the military, somebody who voted to deny medical resources to active duty military members just because they're transgender. If that's what we're calling a moderate, I mean, that shows you just how low the Republican Party has sunk. I do not. I think he takes bad votes that affect this district, the health of this district, the economic security of this district, and certainly the national security of our country. I can go on about his bad votes, but that at the end of the day is really what this is about.
I think that's an excellent point. Thank you for laying all that out there. So one of our recent episodes was about the treatment of migrant children and families at the border. And already, it's only been out a couple weeks, but it's already our most popular to date because this is clearly an issue that people are desperate to know how to fix. And obviously, with 40% of the border with Mexico, this district is a huge piece of, a lot of these families are being separated and children are in terrible conditions there. If you get into Congress, what would you do to address what has become a humanitarian crisis at our border?
Yeah, thank you for highlighting this because too often these things are happening and where it's not getting nearly the amount of attention that it deserves, and unfortunately that's in part based on who's representing this district. Well, as you mentioned, Clint, the detention facility that is actually in Texas 23. And God bless Representative Veronica Escobar, who's actually the representative of Texas 16, which is the neighboring district, because it was her, not Bill Hurd. It was her who demanded accountability from DHS. She's the one that wrote the letter asking, what's going on there? What's the plan? What are you going to do to make sure this doesn't happen? At my core, I fundamentally believe, I think like many of you and many of those listening, that if somebody doesn't have the character to stand up and make sure that kids are safe and healthy and not sick, if you don't stand up when kids' lives are being threatened, then you do not deserve the honor to represent this district or to call yourself a representative. And so I, fundamentally take issue with the way that Will Hurd has handled this issue. It took him over a week to visit the detention facility, at which time he said, he disputed the description of the lawyers as well as the other members of Congress who saw the facility. And it's unfortunate because we've seen the reports of pediatricians and medical professionals that have talked about the long-term mental health consequences that these young people are unfortunately going to have to deal with. I think we stop separating families at the border. I think we, too, need to invest in alternatives to detention. I mean, $750 a day to house these kids is somebody's making a lot of money off of this one. But clearly there are other ways that are more humane and more cost effective than these facilities. I think we dramatically need to increase the number of immigration judges and caseworkers that we have to address this. We certainly need to be making investments and working with our partners. And State Department really needs to lead this effort to make sure that that these countries where folks are coming from, the Northern Triangle, that these are safe communities. They're economically viable, and so people don't feel the need to have to come to our country. And I think it's clear, we need some type of better oversight into what's happening at DHS. I'm very concerned about this, reporting of the Facebook group. Now, it's not all of them. I got it. But there's more than enough to be very concerned about, the failure of leadership in a culture that is a culture in which folks think that, that type of those types of activities are acceptable. So there's a number of things that I would do. Now you might say, well, Will Hurd has said some of those same things. Yeah, but he hasn't done anything, right? So that's going to be the difference. These are the things that I support. And oh, by the way, I'm actually going to work to get them done.
Well, we will do whatever we can to work to get you into office because we desperately need your leadership there in Texas 23. Thank you so much for getting in this fight again, and we wish you the best of luck. We're so pleased that you could come on and talk with us today, Gina. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And for your listeners, please follow along Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. This is the good fight. Please help us fight it. Follow along and would love your support.
Yes, we will link to all of those things in our show notes for sure, and ways for people to be able to support your campaign.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Gina.
Okay, Ash, what's our shit to do this week?
All right, if you're like us, your heart is still broken and maybe feels like an ICE agent took it into a million pieces and stomped on it on a cold cement floor. I'm talking about the migrant children and the people at basically the concentration camps at our border. And we did a whole episode a few weeks back on this that you can go and listen to as background. It's episode 25. But we all get shit done in our own ways. But this isn't one that any of us can sit out, honestly. So it's a choose your own adventure shit to do this week.
Ooh,
the grab bag for all.
So hopefully there's something for everyone to get involved. We have two options for you. If you love a protest and coming together as a community, you can attend a Lights for Liberty vigil this Friday, July 12th. There's a coalition of immigrant advocates, and they're planning a National Day of Action by organizing vigils and events at detention centers where child abuse is rampant and running water is limited and family separation is widespread. But there are several events that are popping up in solidarity all over the state. And you can find out the nearest one to you by texting LIGHTS, L-I-G-H-T-S, LIGHTS, to 97779. So that's 9-777-9. And we'll link that in the show notes as well. And you can RSVP to your nearest event. There's one happening, if you're based in Austin like we are, there's one happening at the Capitol Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. And if you're more of an introvert like me, you can also keep calling our reps. I guess you can't be that introverted because you have to talk on the phone. But you can also email them or use ResistBot to fax them. So we're asking them to defund hate. So our U.S. Congress is in the final stages of deciding how much money to budget for ICE and CBP, which are CBP is Customs and Border Patrol, and ICE is the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement. And Indivisible has done a really great job with a whole explainer on what this means and the $387 million that's slated for ICE right now in the Department of Homeland Security's funding bill. And we'll link all this in the show notes so you can read up on it as part of your shit to do as well. But it's this type of funding that allows for things like the ICE raids, for instance, that are happening that Trump is planning, that he's announced starting this weekend to separate families and honestly just instill more fear in our immigrant communities. So we have to defund this hate so our tax dollars could be used for things instead like humanitarian programs and alternatives to detention. So if
that
angry
costs way less money than detention, by the way,
exactly,
which we've talked about in previous episodes.
It makes good economic sense.
Yeah.
I mean, Republicans are talking about money. Well, they have no problem spending it to fund hate.
That's true.
Exactly. But hopefully we can stop that by complaining a lot and filling their phone lines with voicemails and their offices with fax messages. So if, as I mentioned, if angry ranting to a stranger on the phone sounds really appealing to you, we'll link the suggested script from Indivisible in our show notes. But if you're feeling shy, we'll link more info on ResistBot. You can also email or fax our reps. We'll provide you all of the info you need.
And don't hesitate to call the Democratic ones either, because even though you think they're on our side, it doesn't hurt to hear from constituents and supporters. Like, for example, Congressman Lloyd Doggett signed on for Medicare for All and the Green New Deal based on the support from his constituents.
Awesome. Good point. I love that. A lot of times we forget to call the ones that we think are in our corner, but the more that they hear from us, the more they'll prioritize the things they're hearing about.
Exactly.
All right, that is it for this week, guys. Thank you all for listening. Thank you so much, Jen Ramos, for stepping in this week and being a guest host.
Thank you. Y'all got to understand, I'm like a huge fangirl, so this is like a dream come true in some ways. I'm like really excited to be here.
Aww.
I told you it's a fan siblinghood. We're your fan sisters. We're huge fans of you and all of the work you do for Texas.
Fangirl infinite loop right now. And don't forget to support Jen's campaign to become the National Young Democrats Vice President. And tell your friends to listen to The Rabble. Maybe give us a rating in the pod store.
Yeah.
And follow us on the socials at RouserTX. Talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.